You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, shooting straight into hour number three of Locked and Loaded today. Today's date being Wednesday, the 10th of August, Anno Domini 2022. Yeah, it's been a lively little session so far this morning. I had Karen Hunt joining me from LA in California, and then Stephen Kelly beaming in from an undisclosed location somewhere in Australia. And now I'm very fortunate to be joined by none other than Mr. Basil Valentine from an also undisclosed location somewhere in the UK. But before we usher him to take the stand and promise and pledge and swear an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, I want to look at some news headlines and items that are making the news today, because this needs to be relevant. This is today's news talk, and today we're talking about the news. That's why it's called TNT Radio. So UK-wise, dominated headlines are being dominated by two things. Well, three things. The weather, which is a very British topic of conversation, energy crisis, which is not so British, and also Tory leadership race, or should I say pantomime, to announce who the new leader of the British Parliament will be. So energy bill crisis, the Beeb is reporting, is on a scale of the pandemic, says Martin Lewis, who is a self-styled money-saving expert. He's been making quite a noise about this. He's supposed to be on his holidays. He's stressed out. He thinks the country's going to implode at Christmas. And to be honest, he's probably right. So Martin Lewis in The Guardian is also saying that the government must double energy bill help for the poorest people. There's proposals for a bailout, or not a bailout, but an assistance package, but it's not means tested. So if you have 5 million in the bank, you get 400 quid. If you're dirt poor, you get 400 quid. So he's talking about doubling it for the poorest people. Makes sense. Call for action to avert a national crisis as UK energy bill debt reaches a record high. People not paying their bills. A threat of being disconnected. Cost of living crisis. Sky News reports that energy bosses have been hauled in for talks with the government as household bills soar. You know, hauling someone in for a talk is no good. I used to get hauled in for talks with teachers all the time at school, but it didn't change my behavior. Sometimes they had to beat me with a stick. And then I thought about it twice before I would break any rules, let's just say. So I think we need to go past the talking phase and wrap some knuckles. Lastly, Sky News is reporting that households already owe $1.3 billion to energy suppliers even before the winter bill hikes have set in. So this is, something that we need to watch out for. This is something that's coming. This is something that's looming on the horizon, and something that no doubt will develop further over the next 3 to 4 months. So keep tuned for that. So just to make you aware that not only do we broadcast off of our website, which is tntradio.live, but we also have an app that you can download from the App Store, the Google Play Store, but you can also watch us or listen in anyway at this point in time on Rumble and Odyssey and BitChute and YouTube and all the major streaming platforms. So no matter what you're doing, where you are, whatever device you're using, always stay tuned to TNT Radio.
Digging deeper into the news.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I am joined again for, it feels like it's been a while since I've been speaking to Basil Valentine. It's been 2 or 3 weeks. Basil, how are you, old friend? Are you well?
Sweltering, Rick, sweltering.
Well, listen, welcome back. And by the way, just for those of you who don't know, Basil is a philosopher. Let me quote his own biography here. He's a philosopher, a poet, a broadcaster, a writer, a musician, horse racing aficionado, and for his sins, a Leeds United supporter. And you can catch up with him on Twitter at says, S-A-Y-S underscore Basil, B-A-S-I-L. He's also a regular on the Patrick Henningsen show on TNT Radio and the Sunday Wire broadcast that goes out live from 21st Century Wire on a Sunday. All right, nice guy. Basil, you're sweltering, but welcome back to the show, and I hope you're doing well.
Yes, thanks, Rick. Good to be back.
Yep. There's a lot going on, old friend. There's a lot going on. I don't know if you have anything burning a hole in your heart that you want to talk about, but I'm actually perusing your Twitter feed, and there's plenty of topics and talking points popping up that you have either tweeted or retweeted yourself this week. Is there anything you want to kick off with, or do you want me to set the ball in motion?
Well, this is one of those few weeks in the year when the near total absence of air conditioning mm-hmm. from buildings in the UK suddenly becomes an issue. You know, most of the year, it doesn't matter. You know, 340 days a year, we don't care about air conditioning, but we certainly do on days like today. My God.
You're right.
In old money, I mean, I still think in Fahrenheit, we're in the high 80s, and we will be for the rest of the week. Significantly, but absolutely no rain at all for weeks.
That's right. It's been dry.
Do you remember 1976, Rick?
Well, I was only three, so I'm going to say no. But yeah, I was around, but my memory is a little foggy because I was only 3 years of age.
Right. I remember it very well. We had a family holiday in northern France, and every day was glorious sunshine like this. And then when the drought persisted, the Prime Minister, Jim Callaghan, appointed Dennis Howell as Minister for Drought.
Okay.
Much to the derision of the Tory press. They thought that was hilarious. And needless to say, pretty much as soon as he was appointed, the rain started falling. So he did his job.
He was like shaming almost.
Came to an end.
Yeah. He was like a Tory shaman. He maybe did some dances in the middle of the night in his swimming costume, waving something around a big totem pole. And next thing you know, the heavens opened and
that's
the deluge
right.
came.
Well,
could that be part of it, maybe?
We're at the hosepipe band stage. But what the water situation, although this doesn't necessarily affect grasslands and woodland, which are parched, unfortunately. But the situation with water and the skyrocketing electricity prices has brought into sharp focus what I call the great privatization swindle. The British public were swindled by Margaret Thatcher's privatization program of the 1980s. UK electricity prices are up 217% year on year. 217%. In France, electricity prices are up 4%. 4% in France.
Quite a contrast.
217% in the UK. And here's the rub. A lot of people, myself included, buy their electricity from a company simply known as EDF, which in fact stands for Electricité de France, which is part or wholly owned by the French government. So we are quite literally subsidizing French consumers with our own extortionate energy costs.
I seen an article last week where London was on the verge of a blackout due to a lack of energy or energy reserves. So they negotiated with Belgium and managed to negotiate the supply of electricity at a 500% markup to what they would normally pay. Now, that was after negotiations. So, you know, the question is begged, you know, why are France paying an extra 4%? We're paying an extra 200-odd%. I don't know if you've seen the news this morning, but Sri Lanka have increased their prices by 260% overnight. So since this time yesterday, the prices are up 260% in Sri Lanka, and they're going through the ringer at the minute. They're going through ultimately the government being toppled and mass civil unrest in the streets. In fact, Ceylon Energy, who provide the electricity, they're wanted to increase it by 800%, and it was capped at 267% increase overnight. Never mind year on year. This is day on day. This can't continue on this trajectory. It'll literally be stratospheric in price, no matter where you go to get electricity. How's this all going to resolve, Basil?
Well, I can't speak for Sri Lanka. They've got their own problems. But in the UK, after privatisation, we had a quango set up, Ofgem, which was supposed to regulate the energy companies and make sure that they didn't put up their prices like this. Of course, there's a revolving door between the energy companies themselves, various echelons of the civil service, and Ofgem. So it's anything but independent. It's entirely captured and totally failing to do its job. Simple as that. When it comes to the civil unrest, there is an increasing mood in Britain. I wouldn't quite call it a movement yet, but it might well become the autumn. Can't pay, won't pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's one thing, the odd, you know, recalcitrant, bill dodging householder, and they can be cut off from their electricity supply easily enough. But thousands and thousands of households refusing to pay, that would move things, you know, to a completely different dimension. Likewise, the water. I mean, I think, you know, it's a toss-up, really, which is the biggest scandal, the privatization of water and the huge personal enrichment that the directors of these water companies have allotted themselves. Have you seen that?
They're certainly, they're getting fat off the back of this, aren't they?
Thames Water, I think, paid their directors over £30 million in bonuses last year. I mean, this is just a form of legalized robbery. You know,
are you paying
people in the tent?
You can't
change
pay
your
water
supplier. You've got no choice. Yep. You've got to use this water supplier. There's no market in water. I mean, at least with the electricity companies, you can change your electricity company. You have all these price comparison sites. You can't do that with water. It just comes out the tap. It's the most obvious thing to be in public ownership. And it should be in public ownership. And in privatisation, the British public were swindled out of billions of pounds. And they're now being forced to pay through the nose. Meanwhile,
We don't pay water over here. We don't pay water fees over here.
I'm sorry, there must be something wrong with the line, Rick. I'm sure you just said you don't pay for water in Northern Ireland.
No, we don't. We don't have water charges in Northern Ireland. They tried to bring it in here about, I don't know how many years ago, and there was such an outcry about it, and violence was threatened that they scrapped it. So we don't pay water charges in Northern Ireland. No, we don't have a water bill coming in at all. So I suppose that's, so you should maybe move over here.
You're not kidding. You know, an ordinary three-bedroom house or something, people are paying up to £200 a month just to turn the tap on.
Mm. That's ridiculous, man.
I saw an old chum on Tuesday. We were talking about this. And he said that at one time he'd been occupying a warehouse in West London which had no water connection. There was no tap, no toilet, no water supply of any kind to the premises. But he still got a bill. So needless to say, he contacted the water board to complain about this, the fact that he was being billed for water which he didn't get. And they replied telling him that he still had to pay for the water that fell on the roof of his building and was then channeled by the guttering into the drains. So he had to pay for the drainage of the water that comes out of the sky.
That is absolutely ludicrous. Those people may as well don masks, get themselves a flintlock and ride on a horse up the highways and byways of England and shout, stand and deliver your water meter or your life. It's ridiculous. Well, thankfully, I suppose that's one thing I have to be grateful for as a result of our conversation today, is that I am not saddled with those fees, although we obviously have our own woes over here with electricity prices and heating oil prices are through the roof over here too. We've got to take a quick break, Basil. When we come back in 2 minutes, I want to continue on this. Actually, something you tweeted out from a guy called Hard Beckett about private water utilities squandering money and let it be lost. 3.2 billion litres a day literally seeping into the ground. So we'll touch on that when we come back after these short ads here only, exclusively on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Patrick Henningsen's talking about.
August 8th was also the day of what a lot of Western pundits will say when Russia, invaded Georgia. That's how it's usually portrayed by all the sort of brains that you get and pass for geopolitical commentators. But actually what happened was Georgia attacked South Ossetia. Russian peacekeeping forces moved in and they pushed into Georgia in order to sort of neutralize the threat to South Ossetia. But that was basically an extension of NATO's announcement that year that they wanted to expand NATO to Georgia and Ukraine and to be eventually members of NATO. And the current conflict, the current hostilities that you see right now in Ukraine, it really, that's one of the flashpoints, one of the triggers that led to what you've seen now in 2022. So it's important to have some perspective. It's important to have a little bit of history. If you don't have any history, if you're not factoring in the progression of events that have led us to this day, to this situation, then you're pretty much flying blind and you're at the mercy of whatever the short-term shallow narrative that's being pumped out by these bureaucrats and propagandists, you know, streaming into the mainstream press and then out to the public.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
Democracy in action. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I'm currently sharing the airwaves with my old friend and sparring partner, Mr. Basil Valentine, based out of the UK, sweltering at the minute and lamenting the fact that there's no aircon. You can find him on Twitter at @says_Basil. He's also a stalwart of the 21stCenturyWire.com broadcast on a Sunday, The Sunday Wire with Patrick Henningsen. Basil, we're talking about water and water fees and water charges. There's something that you put up here on your post to say that private water utilities were responsible for almost 3.2 billion litres of water being lost every single day in 2020 to 2021. At the same time, these wasteful polluters paid executives 27 million per annum in bonuses and packages totaling nearly 48 million pounds. Off what the regulator allowed this nationalized water. Is that a viable solution to this fat cat problem amongst the water people?
To be honest, I find the whole subject rather depressing. You know, as you said, you might as well ride a horseback with a bandit mask and carry a pistol, because the British public are just being robbed. You know, you get taken to court and fined and don't pay your water bills, you know. So you're just being extorted, you're being gouged, you're being shaken down. It's a form of sort of legalized gangsterism, if you ask me.
It's a racket.
And I'm not exaggerating at all.
Yeah, It's a racket. Well, listen, it is a little bit depressing, as you say, because there's literally, they've got you over a barrel and there's not a lot that you can actually do about it. So I tell you what we'll do. We'll park that one up and we'll dip back onto the subject of air conditioning, actually.
Well, just to finish to say that, Jeremy Corbyn, of course, and I'm not a Corbynite, I should add that. I haven't said that there isn't a single politician in the world with whom one agrees on absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. But in the last Labour manifesto, Labour Party was calling for renationalisation of water and electricity. And these are hugely popular measures with the public for obvious reasons. The vast majority of the British public believe that the water supply companies and the power companies should be taken back into public ownership. And needless to say, your neoliberal stooge, the empty suit masquerading as a dull politician, Sir Keir Starmer, has ditched the proposal. In fact, it's very hard to think of a single policy, a single thing that the Labour Party these days stand for. Can you think of anything at all that the Labour Party stand for? Other than the fact that they can't define a woman. They can't define a woman.
That's their defining feature. And the fact that, who is it, Angela, that Rayner, I think her name is, said that she was being ogled by Boris Johnson as she sat opposite him in Prime Minister's Question Time. That's the only thing I can think of. And the fact that they enabled the Tories to introduce every draconian policy mandate and detrimental move that they made over the 2 years of lockdowns and COVID shenanigans, they effectively were not the opposition party, but they were an assistant party. They were like the assistant Tory party, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, and they are again. There's an interesting documentary I've seen, a sort of 20-minute teaser called The Big Lie, narrated by Alexei Sale.
And it's a blast from the past.
It talks about the destruction of what was called the Corbyn Project by the establishment and allied forces over the whole false anti-Semitism accusations. And I think the plan is, from this 20-minute teaser, they're going to make a full-length documentary. So that'll be very interesting. The Big Lie. Because, it also covers subjects like the sabotage of Labour in the 2017 general election by its own staff. Mm-hmm. Absolutely extraordinary, that was.
Is it actually called The Big Lie?
Yeah, that's the name of the documentary. That's certainly the working title.
The Nazi Party in 1930s Germany, where Goebbels famously said, "If we tell a lie and we tell it big enough and long enough, the people will start to believe it's the truth." It's an odd working title, I thought, for anybody that knows anything.
Well,
propaganda.
On the contrary, I think it's a great title.
But that's what I mean. The connotations with that title, depending on obviously what slant that they're taking, if they're shining a light under the rock and exposing the cockroaches, then it's a perfectly apt title. But sometimes these documentaries, they surface and the people don't really realize what they've labeled them as, and they can be misconstrued. But certainly if it's a revelatory piece on corruption and the propaganda, then The Big Lies about as an apt title as possible.
I believe the big lie that they're talking about is the whole myth of an anti-Semitism crisis in the Labour Party in the period of Corbyn's leadership, which was, they tried every possible smear, with a Russian agent, Czech agent, a terrorist sympathizer, digging out pictures of Corbyn in all sorts of scenarios, just a wholly unacceptable person to be prime minister. It even went as far, I don't know if you remember, as a currently serving general in the British Army warning that the loyalty of the army under a Corbyn government could not be guaranteed. You know, there was a veiled threat of a military coup. Let us not forget that there were similar threats to the Wilson government in 1974.
See, this is the tactic, you know, the old smear tactic, and I mean, like, we're seeing it, I suppose, to a degree now with the way that they're going after Trump. You know, they raided Mar-a-Lago when the press secretary of the White House was asked today, are the FBI being weaponized against political opponents? Her answer was no comment, which speaks volumes in itself. Maybe what we'll do is we'll look at this skullduggery in a little bit more detail. We've got to take a real quick news break, 30 seconds. And when we come back, we'll look at some of these developments that are happening on the world's political stage here on TNT Radio with Basil Valentine. Please don't go away. Back in 30 seconds.
Darren Metzer here with a quick check of the day's headlines. Firefighters in Cuba have finally gained the upper hand on a colossal fire that's ripped through the Caribbean island's largest oil port. 9 people have either drowned in their homes or been swept to their deaths after floods submerged parts of South Korea's capital city. Counting is underway in Kenya after more than 12 million people cast their ballot in Tuesday's presidential election, and China has warned it's ready to use all means necessary to retake Taiwan.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Yeah, it never stops, as the blurb just said. You know, it seems to be Ukraine is becoming a fading memory in light of the new Taiwan potential crisis that's looming on the world stage. We saw Mar-a-Lago descended upon by swaths of FBI agents that was signed off by a judge that was very integral in the old Epstein pedo island case, supporter of Epstein and Obama. You know, where does this all end, Basil? Or what trajectory are we on with all this? What do you make of this raid? What do you make of Zelensky's waning stock? What do you make of Pelosi's Taiwan trip? All these things we can talk about. Let's talk about some things like that. What do you say?
Yeah, well, I want to just pick up on the destruction of the populist left-wing Labour Party of 2017, because it does have parallels with the Trump situation and the raid at Mar-a-Lago. Strenuous efforts are being made, and Hillary Clinton has made a statement saying that she doesn't think Trump should be allowed to run for president ever again, or something to that effect. Strenuous efforts are being made to prevent Trump from running in 2024. I mean, throughout the Trump presidency, which was, you know, something of a car crash at times, I must admit, we had the whole completely phony Russian collusion myth, 100% fake, and yet the subject of extremely expensive, lengthy investigations. You know, you had Mad Cow on MSNBC bleating about Russia every night for month after month after month after month on the basis that there's no smoke without fire. Well, there was no fire. The whole thing was hot air from start to finish, was designed to discredit a populist, Donald Trump, somebody who actually, in his own funny, folksy kind of way, wanted to do the best for the American people. Now, in a very, very different way, the same thing applied to Jeremy Corbyn. You had a populist who, in his own funny, slightly dysfunctional sort of way, only wanted to do the best for the people of Britain. Neither of them significantly are neoliberal globalists, members of the right sort of corporate elite. Donald Trump is very rich, of course, but as Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House and himself a presidential candidate in 2012, said, Trump doesn't belong to the right clubs. He doesn't know the secret handshakes. You remember that?
Yep, I do.
That was in in 2016.
2012.
That was sort of picked up at the time. You know, what do you mean he doesn't know the? What do you mean he doesn't know the right handshakes? You know, so Trump and Corbyn, both outsiders from the authoritarian groupthink, from the World Economic Forum globalist. You know, biomedical security state, etc. I could add in Zionist, but of course Trump was after making some vague noises on that score, he completely caved in on the Zionism front. But the main reason why Corbyn was destroyed was because he is a lifelong supporter of Palestinian human rights. And the idea that you would have somebody supporting Palestinian human rights in number 10, like at the moment, when Israel has just been murdering and maiming innocent people in Gaza in an unprovoked attack once again. Oh, no. And noticeably, both the Conservative leadership candidates, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, have been bending the knee over the last couple of days and parading their fealty to Israel in the most repulsive spectacle, but I digress. So Trump has been, well, they attempted to humiliate him with this raid on Mar-a-Lago. He was cooperating with the FBI, whoever it was, about, you know, the White House, its papers from when he was in office. Of course, every president has a library set up in their honor when they leave office. I think the George W. Bush Library has a couple of comic books in it. And that's all.
The Beano.
Copy of the Beano, exactly. I believe Trump was marshalling his papers in readiness for his library, certainly cooperating. He'd been told to install a safe or something. But they went for this, you know, dramatic sort of SAS style raid on his luxurious compound in Mar-a-Lago, and it seems to have backfired, because that is not the American way. It's completely unprecedented, and it's made a lot of people sit up and take notice and think, hang on a minute, do we actually live in a democracy anymore? We certainly don't in Britain. I personally don't think they have done in America for a long, long time. But, you know, there are, you know, although, as I say, obviously from completely different political persuasions and all the rest of it, Trump and Corbyn have it in common that they've both been destroyed by neoliberal / neocon establishment, because the face and the policies don't fit with the globalist authoritarian agenda.
Yeah. So even as big as they are as players, the old saying, you know, it's a big club, but you ain't in it, even applies to these fringe outsiders, the like of Corbyn or the like of Trump, who, despite having some political power and financial clout, they still haven't made it into the inner sanctum, as it were, of these skull and crossbones type, you know, old boys clubs, or the Billington Club, or whatever they call that char from Eton that Johnson and Co. was part of. Yeah, they're not in the inner sanctum, as it were. Is that a fair point?
No. And I mean, Corbyn even less so, you know, cardigan-wearing, sort of semi-hippie, who hangs around chilly solidarity meetings at the Islington Town Hall. I mean, forget it. You know what I mean? The idea that the UK national security state would allow somebody like that into number 10 is frankly ludicrous. You know?
It is. Basil, what we're going to do is actually, your sound's a little bit intermittent. What we're going to do is Luke's going to give you a little call on your telephone, okay? So we'll finish this one up on the phone, if that's okay with you, just to keep the sound nice and level, so as we can pick up all the points that you're actually going to make. So we're going to take a real quick break, and hopefully Luke will give you a call on your mobile, and we'll wrap this up, the last 20 minutes up that way, just so as we can make sure we get everything that you have to say, because I do value your input on these topics. So I'm going to take a quick break here on TNT Radio, and we shall reconnect with Mr. Basil Valentine via telephone in 2 minutes' time. So please don't go away.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
In a shocking abuse of its substantial police power, FBI agents last night raided Mar-a-Lago, the Palm Beach estate and primary residence of President Donald J. Trump, looking for 15 boxes of documents that the president had brought with him from the White House in January 2021. These documents are not anything new. They've been the subject of negotiations between the Trump team and the DOJ for a year and a half now. So why was the warrant executed yesterday? Indeed, why was the warrant executed at all? It turns out that Attorney General Merrick Garland and FBI Director Christopher Wray were briefed before the raid was conducted. This has Americans of all political stripes outraged. If they can do it to a former president, they can do it to us. Maybe that's what the 87,000 new IRS agents are for. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Lowe, long jump gold medalist and world record holder. When I was 15, I was waiting to catch my train. In a split second, my life changed. As the train arrived, the crowd surged forward. I was too close to the platform edge, lost my balance, and fell into the path of the oncoming train. I was in a coma for 2 weeks, and it took 2 years to walk again. So please, stand back, look up, and stay rail safe.
How often should you wash your hands?
Maybe around 9 times a day.
4? Like 20?
Maybe twice a day.
Whenever they feel dirty.
When should you wash your hands?
After you touch some raw meat.
And before starting to eat.
At the beginning, I wash my hands before preparing food.
How would you rate your knowledge of food safety?
Probably like an 8 out of 10.
6 or 7.
7.5. Like I know the basics, but I'm not necessarily like an expert in it by any means.
Food safety, it's in your hands.
We were told that the last presidential election was the most secure election in history. Nope, not by a long shot.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, we're back with Basil Valentine. Just to wrap up the Locked and Loaded show today here on TNT Radio with me, your host, Rick Munn. Something I also wanted to touch on with Basil before we run up to time is there was an interview today on BBC Radio 4 with a certain Dr. Pat Price, whereby a chilling warning was issued concerning back catalogues of cancer treatments in the NHS. And Dr. Price states that no other health service shut cancer treatments. Many stage 4 cancers are now finally being discovered. The NHS is responsible for tens of thousands of unnecessary deaths. This is a national tragedy. That's not something we're hearing talked about a lot at the moment, Basil. At best, we get told about waiting lists. We get told about shortage of staff members. We're not told about the collateral damage that the lockdowns and the restriction of access to GPs and closing down of screening appointments and, dare I say, some treatments for cancers. That's not being talked about, but I think those chickens are coming home to roost now, judging by this doctor's interview today on BBC Radio 4. What do you make of this? What do you make of the way the NHS handled cancer patients in particular over the last 2 years?
Well, a friend of mine has actually been very well looked after, and uh-huh. I'm pleased to say just been told he's cancer free following an operation at his local hospital and subsequent chemotherapy treatment. But the other hidden volcano, Rick, is the effect of the injections on accelerating cancers.
Yeah,
there's one American physician in particular called Dr. Ryan Cole, who's been making a lot of noise about how he's seeing cancers accelerate to an unprecedented degree as a result of the injections. Likewise, we're not hearing about these undiagnosed and untreated cancer sufferers. And the other story being ignored, the even bigger one, is, of course, the significant rise in all-cause mortality.
Yeah, that's a big one.
10,000 extra deaths a month, not a word, you know. But, we've seen on GB News, Mark Steen, all sorts of people, once again, just, random people, an actor in Emmerdale Farm, a UK soap opera dropped down dead, and significantly Sean Ryder of the Happy Mondays. Are you a fan? Was that your era?
Yeah, I was, yeah. Big time, yeah, big time. His brother, I believe, died after a booster shot. Now, he's asking questions about that, isn't that correct?
He is. Whether or not he's going to get any answers.
There was a Saudi government minister, actually. I don't know if you've seen Twitter but there's actually a clip of him dropping dead, just like going down like a sack of potatoes at a press conference. Like, 1 minute he was talking, the next minute he was dead. What's it going to take, Basil, to jolt these people? I understand, right, that, for example, thank God your friend got treatment for the cancer, got the chemo, got the surgery, and he's back and he's up and running. Thank God for that. But there's also a lot of stories. I know people that their treatments were cancelled, screenings were cancelled, their mothers or fathers had delays in chemo and they died, or people that have taken the jabs have went into remission, really, or not remission, they've had a resurgence of the cancer where it was previously clear. And now we have these people dropping dead. And as you mentioned, the all-cause mortality rates, this is not just from the so-called COVID. This is all-cause mortality rates are up by as much as 15% year on year, which is an astronomical spike that under any other circumstances would warrant a national investigation as a matter of urgency. But it seems to be just brushed off as a statistical blip. How can they have the audacity to dismiss something like that when there's literally tens of thousands of people dying?
Well, it's just being ignored, and it's indicative of the extent to which we live in heavily propagandized societies.
Yeah.
Propaganda isn't just about ramming particular information from a particular slant down people's throats. It's about what isn't reported as much as what is reported. Remember the huge protests against the lockdowns all over Europe, completely ignored by the corporate media, the dying, the legacy media. There's so many different terms now, but the one I don't like is mainstream, because they have small and dwindling audiences.
It's true.
Likewise, the protests by the Dutch farmers, that insanity of shutting a third of all farms in Holland or something in order to meet nitrogen targets. I mean, I've never heard of anything so ridiculous. Mass protests completely ignored by the legacy media. So the conclusion that we have to draw is that in conjunction with the increasingly authoritarian, formerly liberal Western governments, the legacy media is funneling public opinion, public attention, only in certain directions. Monkeypox, for example, is a world health crisis, even though only a handful of people have actually died of it, and it's perfectly treatable. There are drugs to treat it. Nothing to see here. It's not going to affect most people. But that's where the spotlight is pointed. Is we get this endless, don't look at that, look at this, So we're in the midst of a propaganda war at the moment, and government are going to now try and do their best to double down on it in the UK with their so-called online harms bill designed to combat misinformation and all that.
Yeah, it's a disturbing shift. That'll be there. Another, how would you say, we saw it with anyone who spoke out against the so-called vaccines was immediately struck off platforms like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. It was automatically a guarantee that your account would be suspended. I think they're going to be throwing the net out. They're touching on people that speak out about transgenderism, anybody that speaks out against the Russian Ukraine narrative, and people that are talking now about climate change being a myth. They're all in the category now too. They're in the crosshairs, as it were.
That's right. Well, I'm sure you saw that chap, Darren Brady, who was visited not once but twice by Hampshire Constabulary simply for sharing a meme on Twitter, which apparently caused somebody anxiety. So that's actually a very interesting point, because if causing anxiety warrants a visit from the police, then, you know, the heart of government, the BBC, should all be arrested, because, of course, people tremendous anxiety with their exaggeration of the threat posed by COVID, right?
Terrible
amounts of anxiety they've caused people.
You know, I actually had the guy on yesterday. Did you see the video footage of that where the cops turned up and arrested him? Lawrence Fox was there. There was a news crew there. I actually had the guy on the show yesterday that was there as part of the Bad Law Project that was also arrested at the same time. So he was on the show yesterday, and I was talking with him, and I was trying to get the breakdown on the series of events. So that guy that was put that offensive, potentially offensive meme on social media, the police actually, first of all, came to his door on a Sunday morning with three police officers, and they said, you have posted something that has caused offense. They mentioned that it could be looked upon as a crime, but they were prepared to decriminalize it if he accepted a £60 fixed penalty fine and agreed to go on to a re-education program to treat people with respect. Now, obviously, he was stunned at this, and he said, well, you know, I'm not really prepared to accept that. So the cop said, well, we'll be back again. We'll give you time to think about it. We'll be back for you. And then when they came back then, obviously they knew when they were going to be at his house again. So the Reclaim Party dived in there, and this gentleman, Harry Miller, from the Bad Law Project, who I was talking with yesterday, waded into the fray and got arrested at the same time. He was taken to the station. He's been fingerprinted, DNA swabbed, and charged with obstructing arrest, even though, technically speaking, those gentlemen had done nothing worthy of being arrested. It's just a farce, Basil. But the cops, suppose, you know, it shows you they're not solving crimes. They're not stopping violent crime. They're not stopping rape gangs in Telford or Rochester or anywhere else. Right. But they're more than happy to descend 12 deep to an ex-army veteran's house because he posted something that someone took offense at. Is this not just the beginning of the end here? Is it the end of the beginning? I don't know.
Well, it was 84% of police forces have failed to solve a single burglary in the last 2 years. Burglary and robbery against the person has effectively been decriminalized. If somebody was to rob you of your phone in the street, you can just, unless you can catch up with them at the time and get it back off them, you might as well forget it. You know,
forget about it.
Police have failed to solve a single theft in more than 8 out of 10 neighborhoods. Not one. So one. Not even one. Yeah.
But of course, if you put a meme up, Basil, on your Twitter channel, expect at least 2 meat wagons, 3 squad cars, and a very public arrest where they'll cuff you and drag you off to the station for questioning. Even though, by the way, I don't know if you've seen that footage or watched the whole way through, but the guy was told that he was being arrested, and he kept asking the arresting officer in charge, why? And the cop stood there with his arms folded and very patronizingly said, I've already told you why, I'm not going to tell you again. I think you're just being difficult. before they carted him off down to the station in full view of his neighbors, humiliating the guy, and then ultimately releasing him 2 hours later without any charge or with all charges being dropped. So I think the Bad Law Project are going to really pursue this one and try and make an example of that police force. Do you think that's time well spent?
Well, I'm pleased to say that these two extremely disappointing figures vying to become Prime Minister of Britain, the Margaret Thatcher impersonator Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, have sort of started making noises about redirecting police resources where they should be directed. Sunak claims that he will jail the grooming gangs, let's call them what they are, the rape gangs,
correct,
for life. It remains to be seen whether or not, should he become a Conservative leader, that will come to pass. And back to the energy costs, Truss has done a U-turn and now says she refuses to rule out help with energy bills in apparent U-turn.
Mm-hmm. So that could go either way, really. You know, talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. Yeah, talk is cheap, my friend.
Yes, exactly.
And of course, you know, given the track record of our politicians, and, you know, we're coming up to the last few minutes of the show, let's wrap it up with a reminder to people that are out there that when somebody is vying for power, or at least creating the illusion that they're vying for power, they will tell you anything that they believe that you would like to hear. So, of course, they're going to approach the immigration issue. They're going to approach the benefits issue. They're going to approach the policing issue. They're going to approach corruption, and they're going to say, we're going to have a clean out and we're going to change the way things work. But then, of course, despite who takes the role, whether it be Rishi or whether it be Liz Truss, I mean, like, let's face it, everything that was said pre-appointment will just go out the window, and they'll be moving to their own agenda from that point on. And then what can you do about it? You've just got to suck it up.
Yes, exactly. Now, talking of leaders who'll say anything, Zelensky has vowed to liberate Crimea.
Oh, very good. Yep, no doubt we'll be paying for that as well.
The people of Crimea had a referendum, and they all voted to be part of Russia. So isn't the whole war over there to, in inverted commas, defend democracy? Isn't that what it's supposed to be about? Well, I don't understand. If the people of Crimea voted to be part of Russia, what on earth is Zelensky going to be doing by invading? He's not going to be liberating them. He's going to be occupying.
Basil, the only thing that I could credit Zelensky with liberating is billions and billions of aid from respective governments into the financial void / black hole / money laundering pit that is also known as the Ukraine. That's what Zelensky has liberated. He's liberated billions from the hands of Western, totalitarian states posing as NATO, and into his own coffers and the coffers of his own people. I think the tide is turning on him. I think he's, I describe
there
it as
was that CBS documentary that came up
CBS.
This week that only 30% of the aid actually makes it to the front line. I mean, 70% of $50 billion is an awful lot of money that is disappearing, God knows where. But some so-called Ukrainian refugees turned up in Poland the other day with brand new Lamborghinis. So that might give you some idea. But CBS, having produced this documentary saying that only 30% of American aid made it to the front line, then hastily deleted it. doubtless at the behest of the State Department or the Department of Defense.
They did. And the New York Times as well has been writing this week that there is increasing distrust with the Biden administration and Zelensky. And the audacity was that Zelensky also countered that by saying that he was increasingly distrustful of the Biden administration. So we have the CBS reporting in this. We have the New York Times, excuse me, reporting in this. Obviously, his stock is falling through the floor. I think personally, as I close off the show, I think Zelensky has passed his best before date and is closely approaching his use by date, at which point he will be disappeared or discarded. But time will tell. Basil, we are out of time, believe it or not. The hour has flown by, my friend. And I appreciate you taking time to talk to me on this sweltering hot day. I encourage you to go and sit in the garden with a nice pina colada and a little umbrella in it and read War and Peace or something like that. I'm going to do something similar. I appreciate your time, old friend, and have a lovely day. That's Basil Valentine at says_Basil on Twitter. Follow him there. I'm Rick Munn. This was Locked and Loaded. I'll be back after tomorrow. I'll be back. So tune in for more of the same on TNT Radio.